Everybody, it's Sam here from Financial Samurai, and support for the Financial Samurai podcast and the following message comes from Wonder Capital, the easiest way to invest in large-scale solar energy projects across the U.S. With Wonder, you can help finance renewable energy projects while earning up to 7.5% annually. To get started, visit wondercapital.com/samurai, S-A-M-U-R-A-I. In this episode, I want to talk about how our egos makes us buy things we don't really need, and specifically regarding buying a bigger house than we really need. So I have a confession to make. Despite swearing off San Francisco property, expensive coastal city real estate, I recently submitted an offer for a single-family home. Now, why would I do such a thing given I just sold a single-family home rental last year? It's simple. It's simply ego and maybe a little bit of real estate addiction. So in 2014, I decided to downgrade from a 4-bedroom, 3.5-bathroom, 2,300 square foot home to a 3-bedroom, 2-bathroom, 1,920 square foot home. This is the home that I'm currently in. Not only that, we downgraded from a pretty well-known and expensive neighborhood to a relatively unknown neighborhood in San Francisco. And we took our ego-squashing quest even further by buying a Honda Fit as well. So with simple clothes, a compact car, and a modest middle-class home, we successfully completed our mission to go completely stealth wealth. Then things started to change once our son was born. As of 2018, the median size home is about 2,400 square feet on an 8,400 square foot lot. Our house is only 1,920 square feet on a 5,000 square foot lot. So I was starting to think, well, now that we have a son, shouldn't we at least live a middle class lifestyle given we earn more than the median household income of $80,000 in San Francisco? I was thinking to myself, why are we being so frugal when our lives are half over? You know, I'm 41 this year, and we have a precious little one to take care of. Given our house size is below the median, by definition, most homeowners will have larger house sizes than ours. And one close friend, a really close friend, just built a beautiful 6,000 square foot modern house, and he doesn't even have kids yet. Another friend, older friend, he remodeled his 7,800 square foot house for his wife and three kids. So at least he has a family to take care of. So I'm thinking to myself, why are we living so modestly? I mean, literally, our house is 1/3 to almost 1/4 the size of our friend's house. This is totally keeping up with the Joneses type of mentality. And it's really strange to suddenly start caring about our house size since for the past 4 years, we've been totally happy, thrilled to be in this house. Our kid doesn't care about the size or cost of our house at all. All a child cares about is whether he'll be safe and loved and supported by family and friends. And that's exactly what we're doing as both stay-at-home parents. My wife and I haven't cared about status for a very long time. If we did, we'd still be plugging away at our day jobs, into society, plugged in, so we can make more money and boost our IDs with our job titles. But even with Financial Samurai, which has grown pretty strongly, we don't actively promote ourselves because we really don't care. Yes, we will entertain requests for a podcast interview, but that's about it. You know, other than that, we're not going to do TV. We're not going to do any kind of look at us kind of profiling. I'd rather profile other people and examples of, let's say, $300,000 a year household income and how they're pretty middle class in an expensive city like New York or San Francisco, or profile that $500,000 couple in New York who is, quote, scraping by. I think to me, that's more fun. I don't care about me, and I don't think anybody else really cares about our profile that much. But something happens when you have a kid. You just want to spend all your money making sure that your kid has the best life possible. For example, I agonize over spending $80 on a William & Mary sports jacket, which is perfect for San Francisco, because, I don't know, it's 80 bucks. Even though the sleeves are fraying because the jacket is 10 years old, I just can't get myself to spend that kind of money. But if it comes to a toy or some kind of book or something, anything educational for my son, I'm all for it. I mean, our Amazon Prime account must be a little bit ridiculous, and I'm too scared to look at it, frankly. So in addition to ego, the other reason I wanted to buy this house was the desire for profit. The house I wanted to buy was 4,000 square feet, 5 bedrooms, and 4 baths. It was priced at $2.2 million, which sounds like a lot, but on a price per square footage basis, it was 40% lower than all the other houses in the neighborhood. The main reason was that it needed around $500,000 worth of work. We're talking brand new electrical wiring, new bathrooms, new walls, new kitchen, new windows for sure, and probably new floors because many of them are uneven. So not being someone who could resist a deal, I put a lowball offer in for $1.95 million all cash, and I figured if I won, I'd spend the next 8, maybe to 12 months remodeling the house and be all in for $2.45 million. If I were to flip the home, I could probably get $2.7 million with 95% confidence, $2.8 million with 75% confidence, and $2.9 million with 60% confidence. So we're talking a $250,000 to $450,000 gross profit before fees and taxes, which is pretty good for 1 year's worth of work. But of course, I'm going to live in the house for 2 years so I can be eligible for the tax-free profit rule. And if I decide not to flip the house, well, my family and I can move into this home and happily live there for the next 10 years, no problem, and rent out our existing home for at least 2 to 3 years before deciding whether to sell for some tax-free profits. So no, it wasn't just ego that drove me to make an offer on this house. It was also the possibility of profit that made me want to take on this project. Alas, despite putting an all-cash offer with a very attractive 4-day close and a lovely letter, the seller countered us at $2.3 million. That's a $350,000 difference. So clearly the seller is absolutely out of her mind and is just, I don't know, totally not being rational here. And so there's no way we're going to pay that price. So we rejected the counter and the house still remains unsold weeks later as of today. I wasn't too disappointed with our rejection because the counter price was so far away from our offer price. Besides the $500,000 in remodeling costs, my contractor friend said I might have to spend another $100,000 or more for foundation work if the city passed a law that requires single-family homes to be retrofitted for earthquakes. Now, this is something all home buyers should be aware of, that government rules, government laws can change on a whim. Just look at the 15% foreign non-homeowner tax that the Canadian government instituted earlier this year. The Toronto and Vancouver housing market are collapsing right now. I don't know how much they will collapse by, but a lot of people are hurting pretty badly right now. It's so weird how easily I could rationalize going through the pain of remodeling again. And in this case, I told myself I wouldn't be as stressed because this time I wouldn't be living in the house while it was being remodeled. And also, I would get a really good general contractor. But then my wife reminded me about all the times I told her during the 2014 and 2015 remodel period that I kept on saying, I swear I will never remodel or buy another fixer in my lifetime again. So as I reflect on this decision and this desire to purchase this house, I realized that immediate family played a big role in my decision as well. Because our house is small, housing two parents for longer than a week really starts feeling a little bit strained. You know, we all have our own schedules, sleeping habits, eating habits, and way of doing things after so many years. So I figured if I could own a bigger house with a whole separate floor for my parents to stay, I think this would be a good situation. They'd have their own kitchen, own TV, living room, and bathroom. They'd use the house Wi-Fi. And not only could I spend more time with my parents, they could see their grandson grow up, and we can be there for them in case of an emergency. This is a scenario I've been dreaming for a very long time, and I hope it one day comes true. I don't think anybody has ever regretted spending a lot of time with their parents. I just wanted to take a moment again to thank Wonder Capital for supporting the Financial Samurai podcast. Wonder Capital is one of the easiest ways to invest in large-scale solar energy projects across the U.S. Experts at Bloomberg estimate that $2.8 trillion will be invested in solar energy by 2040. And with Wonder Capital's solar investment platform, individuals can now take advantage of this economic opportunity. Visit wondercapital.com/samurai, S-A-M-U-R-A-I, to find out how you can begin investing in solar energy projects while earning up to 7.5% annually, and also helping in the fight against climate change. So I wanted to end this podcast by talking about several reasons why you should fight your ego and not buy a big home you really, really don't need. One, fewer maintenance headaches. The more windows you have, the more potential leaks. The more wiring you have, the higher potential for fires, especially if you have old wiring. The larger the roof, the more costly it is to replace. Maintenance issues are never, ever ending when it comes to home ownership. Two, quicker and cheaper to clean. Why spend hours cleaning your home when you can spend minutes? Why pay someone $500 to clean your home because you have three levels and five bedrooms and four bathrooms when you can pay $80 to clean three bedrooms and two bathrooms? Three, maximum utilization. If you live in a house with underutilized or unutilized rooms, after a while you're going to start feeling really, really stupid for having so much wasted space. And this is partly the reason why so many empty nesters tend to downsize after their kids leave. Conversely, if you're using each room every day, you will feel like you are getting the maximum amount of return for your money. In the post, I have like this really cool graphic where it shows where people mostly congregate in their homes. And those areas are the kitchen, the family room, the toilet, and I guess a little bit of the living room. Four, if you love to travel, you're going to have less guilt traveling for an extended period of time. Given larger houses tend to have higher home ownership costs, every time you go away on vacation or extended travel, you're wasting more money than you would owning a smaller house. Also, you won't feel as married to your house, which makes you more free, and feeling free is priceless. Five, fewer property taxes. Property tax is a wealth tax that lasts forever. It makes me a little bit ill when I think that if I were to buy this new house, I'd be paying an additional $25,000 a year in property taxes while there's still massive homelessness in San Francisco, poor public transportation infrastructure, and a public school lottery system. I'd be so pissed if my son couldn't get into the local elementary school after paying over $100,000 in property taxes over the next 4 years. I mean, wouldn't you? Six, more passive income. With the price difference between the bigger house you want to buy and the smaller home you purchase, you can use that money to earn passive income. Since we won't be spending $2 million on this house, which we don't really need, we get to earn at least $50,000 a year in risk-free income, and that feels really darn good. Seven, no remodeling nightmares. If you end up buying a fixer, you're going to want to remodel the house. Unfortunately, remodeling is an absolute disaster most of the time, even if you have a great contractor, because delays and surprise costs always come up. Eight, nobody really cares how you live. Only you care, but then you actually really don't care so long as you're comfortable. Unless you're constantly entertaining guests or you run some kind of interior design blog where you're taking pictures of before and after, nobody will really know or care how nice your house is. The only thing that matters is whether or not your home fits your lifestyle. For us, we'd much rather use the $8,000 a month we save on ownership costs by owning a smaller house for travel and education than spending it on a much larger house with maybe one more full bath and a family room. Nine, you become less of a target. My friends who live in large homes are much more worried about stalkers and burglars than my friends who live in smaller homes. After all, if you're going to steal, you might as well steal from the rich or the somewhat rich instead of the middle class or poor. One such friend has a neighborhood security guard he decided to hire with several other homeowners so that he can sit in his car all evening and watch for burglars. Another friend built a panic room with 10-inch thick steel doors. Now, I don't know how much that costs, but it's probably cost at least $30,000 extra. And they all have extremely expensive security systems, which cost hundreds and hundreds of dollars a month to run. 10, kids can go wild, no problem. When you buy a cheaper home, you aren't as stressed about kids scratching the floors or drawing on the walls or breaking the handles and knobs or spilling food and drink on the floor. My friend who just finished remodeling a 6,000 square foot home told me he had a lot of anxiety when another friend came over with their toddler and their kid started putting his hand all over his white walls. So I joked to him that every single room he should have some white gloves for everybody to put on before they enter. My friend even frowned at me when I sat on his new sofa after a game of tennis. So you don't want to live in a museum. You want to live in a home where you can relax and do things and not really care or worry if things get damaged. At the end of the day, you can always just repaint or clean it, right? 11, smaller environmental footprint. It's always funny to hear extremely wealthy people talk about the importance of the environment while they live in mega mansions that soak up so much water and consume massive amounts of electricity to, I don't know what they're doing. They're like, they got their swimming pool, they've got their fountain and all that. It's just kind of nuts. And then finally, 12, you can help alleviate a housing shortage. If everybody drove a bus to and from work with nobody else inside that bus, there would be massive traffic jams all day long. So by living in a home that is a mega mansion with plenty of rooms, that's like driving a bus to and from work. So by living in a home that is being fully utilized, on the other hand, we maximize existing inventory and make housing more affordable by reducing demand because more people have places to stay. So let me conclude by saying that instead of buying a house two sizes too big, buy a house that's just the right size with a spare bedroom for visitors or a new addition. When your ego clamors to come out, knock it down and take solace in knowing that you can afford to buy a much larger house if you really want to, but you don't have to deal with any of the headaches that go along with living in a mansion. Combating ego and the growing of an ego is something that I've had to deal with my entire life. You know, when it comes to sports, you easily can get a big head, and as soon as you get a big head, you just get crushed by your opponent. I remember getting into college and feeling really proud, but then as soon as you rest on your laurels, you're not going to try as hard in college and you're not going to get a good job. I remember getting a good job out of college and think, oh man, now I'm at a really good firm. I must be doing something well. But then as soon as you start thinking it that way, you just start slacking off and taking things for granted. So really, I think we need to all figure out a way to suppress our egos, to stay humble, and to stay motivated. Otherwise, I think life is going to pass us by. People are going to run all over us. So I'd love to hear from all of you on how much ego plays a part in your purchase of things like a car or a house. And have you ever had the urge to buy a bigger house based on ego rather than utility? And have you thought about buying a bigger house in order to be more comfortable living with and taking care of your parents when they are older? This is something that I always think about. Thanks a lot, everybody, and hope to hear from all of you.